All right, let's dive right in. Today we're going deep on a case with some serious weight to it. Poudre v. Tonawanda Band of Seneca Indians back in 96.
Ah, Poudre. A classic, really. It's a must-know for any law student out there, especially when you're trying to wrap your head around how tribal sovereignty and individual rights intersect, you know?
Yeah.
Particularly when federal courts get involved in tribal governance.
Exactly. And that's what makes this case so fascinating, right? This push and pull between fundamental liberties and the power of tribal nations to govern themselves.
Absolutely. So with this deep dive on Poudre, we really want to get to the bottom of this question. Can a tribal council, just by saying so, permanently banish members, and can that be reviewed by federal courts using habeas corpus under ICRA?
The Indian Civil Rights Act.
Right.
So much at stake here. You know, it's about belonging, heritage, the whole deal. It really highlights that tension you mentioned. So how did we even get to this legal showdown? What happened?
Well, it all started back in 92 within the Tonawanda Seneca community. Five tribal members were accused of treason. At least that's what the Council of Chiefs called it.
Treason. Wow. And the consequences were pretty severe, right? We're not talking about a slap on the wrist here.
Oh, absolutely not. This was full-on banishment. Not just temporary. We're talking citizenship revoked, names stricken from the rolls, even their Indian names taken away, and they were kicked off the Tonawanda Reservation.
No trial, no due process, nothing.
Nope. None whatsoever. They didn't have a chance to defend themselves or even really understand the charges against them in a formal way.
So naturally they pushed back, right?
You bet. They filed habeas corpus petitions in federal court. They were relying on ICRA, saying their rights were violated, especially the right to counsel. And they argued the banishment was cruel and unusual punishment.
So what happened? Did the court side with them?
Well, the district court initially said no. They tossed the case out, saying banishment wasn't really detention, as ICRA uses the term in its habeas corpus provision. But they appealed, and the Second Circuit, well, they reversed that decision.
And that's where things get really interesting, I bet. So after that back and forth, what was the core legal issue the Second Circuit was grappling with?
It boiled down to this. Does permanent banishment actually qualify as detention for the purposes of ICRA habeas jurisdiction? In other words, can this kind of banishment trigger federal court review?
Okay, so that's the million-dollar question. And what did they decide?
The majority said yes.
They did. Wow. What was their reasoning?
Judge Cabranes, he wrote the majority opinion, and he really focused on how huge of an impact banishment has. He called it a severe restraint on liberty, something that rips apart a person's political and cultural identity.
I mean, it's more than just losing your membership card, right?
Exactly. Mm. The court was very clear that this wasn't like a fine or a temporary suspension. Banishment, they said. That's a whole different ballgame when it comes to being deprived of something.
There was a pretty powerful line in the majority opinion, something about this deprivation being as serious as losing life or liberty, right?
Spot on. The quote was, "To take away a man's citizenship deprives him of a right no less precious than life or liberty." Really drives home how central they saw tribal membership as being.
Powerful stuff. So how did they get to the conclusion that this specific banishment met that detention requirement?
All right, so they had this four-factor test to figure out if banishment was detention under ICRA for habeas purposes.
Four factors, okay. Lay it on me.
Factor one, are the restraints on these folks unique to them, things the general public doesn't deal with? And here, it was clear, being banished from tribal land and losing tribal citizenship, that's not something non-members face.
Makes sense. What's number two?
Number two gets to how severe that restriction of liberty is. And the court said, look, permanent banishment, that takes away your identity, cuts you off from your community. That's a major, major restriction.
Okay, so that's two down. What were the last two factors?
Number three looks at whether the tribe's actions basically destroyed the individual's political and cultural ties.
Oh.
And, well, banishment kind of does that by definition.
Right. It severs those ties completely.
Yeah, exactly. And the fourth one, that looks at whether the banished members had any other way to challenge the council's decision within the tribal system itself. The court didn't see any real alternative remedies here, which suggests that federal habeas review might be the only option in such extreme cases. So in Poudre, they found that all four factors were met.
Wow. So a pretty strong case for the banished members then.
Yeah. But remember, it wasn't a slam dunk. There was a dissenting opinion from Judge Jacobs.
Oh, right. There's always a dissenting opinion. What did he have to say?
His main point was that banishment doesn't really take away freedoms that the general public enjoys. He argued that, look, people who aren't Tonawanda Seneca members, they can't just live on the reservation anyway. So being barred from it because of banishment, it doesn't take away a freedom that everyone else has.
So he was basically saying it's more of an internal tribal matter than a broader restriction on liberty.
Exactly. He was worried about federal courts stepping on the toes of tribal sovereignty, that essential right of a tribe to decide who belongs and how to run their own affairs. He saw this as a slippery slope, you know, federal courts meddling in tribal business.
Yeah, I can see that concern. Like, where do you draw the line?
That's exactly what he argued. If banishment opens the door to federal review, then what's next? He worried it would chip away at tribal autonomy.
So how did the majority respond to that? Did they just ignore those sovereignty concerns?
Oh, they definitely acknowledged how important tribal sovereignty is. But they emphasized that, look, Congress passed ICRA to set a floor for individual rights within tribal nations. They said ICRA was designed to act as a safeguard against tribal actions, even internal ones, that could be really harmful to individual liberty.
So, striking a balance, protecting individuals without totally undermining tribal self-governance.
Right on the money.
So, stepping back, what are the big takeaways from Poudry? What should law students really grasp about this case?
This case really highlights that constant balancing act between the power of tribal nations, their right to govern themselves, and the rights of individuals, especially as they're laid out in federal law.
And it broadened our understanding of habeas corpus, right? It's not just about being locked up anymore.
Exactly. Poudry showed us that detention can include these non-custodial restrictions on freedom, things that cut to the heart of someone's identity and their place in the community.
So banishing someone can be just as bad as locking them up, at least in the eyes of the law.
Precisely. And that idea that liberty is more than just physical freedom, that's had a lasting impact.
Seems like the court had a tough job trying to thread the needle between these two concepts.
Absolutely. They were trying to respect tribal authority while also making sure individual rights didn't get trampled.
So for our law students listening, what are the key legal principles they should walk away with?
First, tribal authority isn't limitless. Federal law, like ICRA, can step in when individual rights are at stake. Second, federal courts can intervene in tribal affairs, but only when things are really serious, like when someone's political existence is threatened and they have no other options within the tribe.
Right, like when it's more than just a minor tribal squabble.
Exactly. And third, remember tribal sovereign immunity. Tribes are generally protected from being sued in federal court.
But Poudry showed us that you can sue individual tribal officials if they overstep their bounds, right?
That's the gist of it.
Okay, so let's say our law students are analyzing a similar case down the line. What should they be thinking about?
Look at how seriously the tribe's action restricts the person's freedom. Is it just an inconvenience or does it fundamentally change their life?
Like their ability to live and participate in their community.
Right. And also, are there other ways for them to challenge the decision within the tribal system itself? That's crucial.
And that four-factor test, that's a handy tool, right?
Oh, absolutely. Unique restraints, severity of the restriction, destruction of political and cultural ties, lack of other options. Those are the questions that will help determine if a federal court can even get involved under ICRA.
Got it. So much to unpack here.
It really gets at the heart of how our legal system works when different systems like federal and tribal law bump up against each other.
So Poudry, it's more than just a case. It's a whole lesson in navigating these tricky waters.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's a landmark case because it tries to protect individual rights without undermining the whole idea of tribal self-governance.
It leaves us with a lot to think about. Like, how do we define liberty in a world with so many different legal systems? And how do we protect individual rights while respecting the sovereignty of distinct groups? Big questions, but important ones.
Absolutely. Food for thought for our listeners.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Poudry. We'll catch you on the next one.